Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Min Xian. In most cases, gerrymandering, the practice of drawing political district boundaries to favor a specific political party, creates unequal representation. Michael McDonald and Micah Altman are the lead researchers for the Public Mapping Project. Their work provides the public with tools and data to create and evaluate redistricting plans for transparency and greater participation in the process. They are the winners of the McCourtney Institute for Democracy's 2018 Brown Democracy Medal. Michael and Micah, welcome to Take Note.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
When we talk about representation, it seems very natural to think about electing officials and putting them in political office. Do you think sometimes the importance of districts gets lost in the conversation?
Well, redistricting is a process story, and so it's very difficult for people to grasp process stories. It's easy to grasp the characters who are running in a campaign, and much of the news coverage focuses around personalities and scandals and things that missteps that candidates make. It's more difficult for the media to focus on a process story because it's not as interesting. It doesn't have that human interest element to it. And so part of what we were going after when we created the project that we did was to transform the redistricting story into one that was more about personal nature so that we would have more people be able to understand and consume the news and understand the process better.
And redistricting is in some ways the opposite of how we normally think about representation. Most people think about representation, as you said, you elect someone and they then they're supposed to act in your interest. But in redistricting, that's turned around, in that districts are designed and you have a political process that is selecting people who are going to be represented. So sometimes you have the selectors themselves choosing those who are going to represent them. And that's an odd concept.
At the beginning of your book, How Public Participation Can Revolutionize Redistricting, there was a successful example of public mapping from Minneapolis in 2013. Can you talk about what happened and what's your idea of a fair and public redistricting process?
Well, perhaps it's better to start off with why it's difficult for the public to be engaged in redistricting. Redistricting is a very technical process. And if you were just a layperson in the public and you wanted to draw your own districts, you would have to, at least in the past, go buy some expensive software. You'd have to understand how to use that software. You'd also have to be able to incorporate data into that software. And that would be very necessary to draw legal redistricting plans. And so all of that is a very complex process for someone who's a layperson. And that gets us to what happened in Minneapolis. So we were working with Common Cause in Minnesota and other reform groups in the Midwest, and they had deployed our software to support the generation of public maps in Minnesota as a whole. And in 2010, a ballot initiative had been passed in the city of Minneapolis to have a redistricting commission, a citizen commission, that would draw maps without the political interference that might have happened in the past. So we reconfigured our software to support the drawing of the city council districts in Minneapolis. And some of the commissioners started using our software, but more importantly, there were two community groups that also started using the software. And one of them was a group that represented the Somali community. Another was a group that represented the Latino community. And they drew districts that they thought would be best for their communities. Through the software, not only were they able to draw those districts, but they were able to share them with the commissioners who were also using the software. And the commissioners liked those ideas too. And so they could just cut and paste basically those districts from one plan to another. And they incorporated those districts. And then in the 2012 city council elections, Minneapolis elected their first Somali and first Latino, really Latina, member to their city council in the city's history.
So I guess, Micah, I will also curveball this question for you, is what are some elements that you look for in your idea of a public and fair redistricting process?
I think a open and fair mapping process is defined by an open and fair government process. And that's not an on and off switch. It starts with people having a right to participate and recognizing that they have some right to public commentary on the process. There's indirect inclusion of people. Do we know about where people live, their neighborhoods, their desires? Is there an effort to get any information about them? Do people understand the importance of this? Is there education for people about how this is an important issue, and if so, how they can engage? And at that point, you can offer some, build on that and offer some direct participation. If there's participation, can people get the information that they need to participate? Or if you're trying to understand the political impact of a district, do you have information about partisan registration or voting? And this is open or not to different extents in different parts of the country. Are the tools that you need available to you? And can you see how they work? And the last step in openness would be some explicit bringing of the public into the decision-making process. That involves institutions as well. So open government requires, as a ladder, participation, and it requires education, information, tools, and all of those, as Michael will be able to attest, were part of this project.
Michael, you touched on this topic a little bit. In reality, there are a lot of different barriers to doing this public mapping. For example, the cost of drawing maps, the accessibility to different softwares and technology. I wonder what other barriers might still exist today, and how might those challenges actually change over time?
Well, Micah's alluded to some of them. You have to have an open process. You have to have a redistricting commission or even a legislature that's just open to ideas from the public. There have to be a set of well-defined criteria that you would be trying to accomplish with the redistricting plan, because without that, then anything goes. So if, for example, if political fairness is one of the issues, and that's here in Pennsylvania, that's now the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has said that that is a required criteria for drawing districts. Well, then you want to incorporate that into the sort of decision making that you have when you're drawing districts and being able to evaluate the districts on some sort of measure of fairness. So, and then lastly, you know, you need that openness by the entity that's going to be doing redistricting to consider not just accept a map. That's easy. They could just have an open portal and, hey, submit maps. But if you don't actually are responsive to those submissions, then that doesn't get you to where you want it to be either.
And, Michael, I know that you mentioned some barriers, some challenges that contribute to this process.
So there are lots of barriers, and the most important ones are not technical. But the technical barriers are the ones that are changing most quickly, right? And our ability to do things with technology is what's changing most quickly. In the 2000s, when there were an explosion of the World Wide Web, it made it really easy to push information out to people, to share information. We saw, having together done research on historical redistricting processes in this time, we saw more information being shared out. But it was still really difficult for even good government groups who wanted to participate in the process and might have been able to obtain some of the data to go through this very technical process of redistricting. And in the succeeding decade, by 2010, the internet was fast enough, there was enough data shared for all sorts of purposes, and there was a robust open source community that provided tools, building blocks, where we could take a problem that's very detailed accounting problem, making sure that 100,000 blocks add up to the same number in six different pieces, when all of the pieces have different weights on them and different shapes, fitting that complex jigsaw puzzle and knowing that you've met the rules of the submission, to a more visual problem. And it was this, you know, this change in technology, the ability to have these building blocks to simplify this technical problem, make it more into a, you know, a visual, simple problem that people could deal with, that helped solve part of the barrier. All the other barriers were there, but it gave a missing part of the piece that all of those other partners could use. In the future, we can certainly predict that we're going to have more bandwidth, more information, more computing power, and there are a lot of things that are still very difficult about this process.
For redistricting, there are some very hard legal criteria to meet when it comes to drawing district boundaries, including a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court in the 1960s that says districts must be of roughly equal population. How important was that district, and how does it impact redistricting these days? Michael?
Well, we really wouldn't have redistricting following each census if it wasn't for that Supreme Court ruling. So that routinized the process. And at the time, people thought gerrymandering had been solved, because prior to these rulings in the 1960s, some states hadn't redrawn their districts for up to 60 years. And some of those districts had become wildly out of balance in terms of urban areas had grown significantly and rural areas that had not grown at all. And so it was thought that this malapportionment, which is the name for it, rectifying malapportionment would do away with all the sort of evils that was with gerrymandering. And it turned out that wasn't true. It turned out that it didn't take the politicians too long to figure out how to carve out districts in a way that could still benefit them, even while having equal balanced districts. But that is a technical requirement, and you have to be able to sift through a lot of data in order to calculate the population for the districts. And so if you don't have a tool that's available for you, your districts are not going to be equal. You can't just go onto a map and take a crayon and draw a district. That's not an easy thing to do by hand, but it is something that computers can do very easily. So having the computer assist you in calculating the statistics that you need in order to meet legal criteria is very important. But one thing about just handing this over to computers is that computers can draw districts. It's without a doubt that's a possibility. But what they can't do is they can't balance anything other than the things that you give it. It can't draw a district for, say, respecting a community. And so there should be a human element to this as well, that we should look at the districts and look at them and say, does this make sense? Does this line here, yes, it's more compact, but it's splitting this community, and is that something that we want to do? And so that human element still needs to come in at some point.
Well, I'll completely agree with Michael's take on algorithms. Any one criteria is probably going to, or criterion is probably going to be inefficient. As Michael said, equal population was critical to eliminating one extreme form of political manipulation. But taken to the extreme, where you have to balance districts of hundreds of thousands of people at a difference of one or two people, it can create pathologies. And it can drive out other criteria. So looking at historical districts after the 1960s decision, especially for congressional districts, the tolerance for differences in population got smaller and smaller until it at one point was effectively zero. And we saw at the same time other districting criteria being abandoned, things like compactness, county boundaries. And these are not necessarily good in and of themselves, but often focusing on one criteria makes it either impossible to look at others or gives you an excuse for doing some things in other aspects of districting that you could reasonably have done without much cost to the primary goal.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Michael McDonald and Micah Altman, the lead researchers for the Public Mapping Project. Their work provides the public with tools and data to create and evaluate redistricting plans. They are the winners of the McCourtney Institute for Democracy's 2018 Brown Democracy Medal. So you believe that redistricting shouldn't be just automated by computers, but instead a task maybe shared by both men and machine for various reasons. Going to the machine part, you created the District Builder, which is kind of the center of the public mapping project. Can you talk about how the application works and what are some maybe real life applications that's already happened? Micah?
Can I talk about how the application works?
Sure.
Well, it's multi-layered. At the bottom, what makes it work is having data and a place to put that data and organize it. And so we use open source databases. And on top of that, you need a way of displaying maps and visualizations. And so there are groups of open source projects that work in that area. On top of that, there is how the way that you interact with people and all sorts of workflows, from how do I sign up on the website to how do I get a new password on my account, or pan and zoom around a map, or share things with social media. So there all these building blocks for all these sorts of things that we're used to doing with technology all the time.
So has the map, the application, been used in real-world examples?
Oh, yeah. We were working with advocacy partners around the country to be partners in holding redistricting competitions. That was one of the more popular forms that we did. Now, for the most part, those winning maps were submitted to some legislatures as part of the formal redistricting process or commission. Those redistricting authorities said, thank you very much, and ignored everything that went on there. However, there are a couple points where we can say that, you know, perhaps the public had some good ideas that the politicians did incorporate, or in one case in New York, where a court incorporated. Of course, we talked about earlier in Minneapolis had a real effect. But in New York, again, when the court was drawing the maps, a special master appeared to be incorporating some of the elements from a student plan there as well in drawing districts around Buffalo. So there were some limited successes. Again, I think if we're going to have real success, we have to have a real open process where a redistricting authority will take in these ideas, evaluate them, and then be responsive. And if a state government is not living up to those responsibilities, then there's a legal strategy in the aftermath to say, you could have done this better, and you knew that you could do this better, and yet you didn't.
This is a big question that I have. Although a lot of data processing, mathematics, and other sciences are involved, at the core of redistricting, we're talking about making representation fair. Do you think there's a way for public to find common grounds on the values of representation, and what counts as fair?
That is a very thorny question. And ultimately, it involves human judgment over different values that you might have. Is fairness respecting communities? Is it having a political balance within the state? Is it racial representation? And sometimes these different goals are at odds with one another. But one of the things that we did find through our mapping and having these competitions is that there really actually isn't as much tension between these goals as you might think. It was still possible in Virginia, for example, to draw a politically fair map where there was an equal balance of Democratic and Republican leaning districts within the state and improve minority representation. And then if we take a step back and look at all the public maps that we were able to evaluate, both the ones that were drawn with our software but also through other processes, we can see that the public really does approach redistricting in a fundamentally different way than what the politicians do. The politicians are clearly gerrymandering. They are trying to extract as much political advantage as they can for their political party. Whereas the public, again, setting aside the debates about fairness, but at least in terms of minority representation and political fairness, we can see that the maps tended to be more have more of those things, and that these two goals actually weren't at tension with one another. And having commissions is a good start, but I think we need input to those commissions. We need to show those commissions what are the possibilities so that they have a good menu to select from and they can select a plan that will be politically fair. And if I can sound a really hopeful note, I think, is to go back to what I said earlier, that we had red states, blue states, both adopt redistricting reform in this last election. And so despite our significant political divides, we are still a country that values fairness. And there are some commonalities here that we as a country, maybe although our politics is so toxic, we as Americans realize that our democracy needs to function well. And here with redistricting, we can actually see that how people do come together and support a better way to have our democracy work.
So it doesn't have to be perfect, but fair, any kind of fair is better than unfair.
Right. We can identify what's unfair pretty easily. And we can get better fairness, although we can have a little bit of debate as to exactly what that fairness is. But we can certainly get better fairness than what we're getting right now.
And I know that we all mentioned this. In Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court struck down the previous congressional map in February and ordered a new map. And before then, 13 out of our 18 congressional districts were Republican, even though Pennsylvania has roughly the same number of registered Republicans and Democrats. And after the midterm elections, we're now at an even 9-9. So does that mean the problem is solved? No more gerrymandering?
Well, at least for now, conditions can change in the future. But that is a hopeful sign, although some have pointed out that the Democrats actually might have given their vote share for those districts, might have won an additional seat. But, but at least we have a fairer split than we used to have in Pennsylvania and in some other states, too. It's not just Pennsylvania. Florida and Virginia are two states where there was legal action and we had fairer maps after that as well. So we can get a better outcome. We'll see if after, we're just a couple years away now. So it's important for people to be engaged as we go into the next census and the next round of redistricting so that we can, again, keep a vigilant watch on what's happening and hold representatives accountable if they violate the core values and legal requirements that they must meet.
Micah?
To go back to a little bit in the conversation, I think part of achieving the greatest open government participation requires that this be built into the institutions of government. So there's a lot we can do with technology and advocacy and the like, but it requires institutions to create fair and equitable outcomes. And to make sure they're there. The courts have been an important institution in redistricting and often, though maybe not as often as they could or should be, a counterweight to the partisan creation of districts. But to reach a process where we can say gerrymandering is finished would involve institutional change. Perhaps something like an independent commission that was not tied to the legislature for its funding or decision making, along with tools, information, engagement.
Well, we're not too far away from 2020, which is a census year, which will be followed by another redistricting. What better approaches will you be looking for, expecting, hoping you will see?
Well, we're pretty much done with the possibilities for reform at this point. In most states, we now know who's going to control the process. And what was really important, I think, in this election that maybe a lot of people have missed is that the Democrats won some key governorships, and they're going to be able to put a brake on some Republican legislatures. So we're going to have more divided government. And that means that one party is not going to be able to just simply put their own partisan gerrymander into place, which means either the two are going to come to loggerheads and it's going to go to the courts, or they're going to come to some compromise. But if it goes to the courts, I think that's, again, where the public really needs to be involved in this process, because the courts can adjudicate and they can look at the criteria that are necessary within their state. And they can look at all the plans, not just the ones that are created by the political parties, and they can select among those plans. And so I think there's an opportunity in divided government states. There are more states since 2010 that have adopted some form of commission that has an open process as well. So I think there are a lot of opportunities now. There's still some states where one party controls the state government and there's no commission process. So, you know, there's still work to be done. But a lot of progress has been made in reforming the process. And then as a happenstance of these elections, we have more opportunities for divided government that's going to provide opportunities for the public and the courts to be more engaged in redistricting.
Yes, with the upcoming round of U.S. redistricting, the wheels have been set in motion, but we will see how commissions that have been working or that are newly created and how the new round of technologies are used in those places where they're lined up to be used. And we can also look beyond the U.S. to see innovations. There's apportionment and redistricting probably coming up in Mexico, and redistricting happens in other states, in other countries, and we can learn from innovations in those countries as well.
Michael and Micah, thank you for joining us on Take Note.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael McDonald is an associate professor of political science at the University of Florida. Micah Altman is the director of research for the Center on Research and Equitable and Open Scholarship at MIT and the director of research at the MIT Libraries. The two are lead researchers for the Public Mapping Project. They are the winners of the McCourtney Institute's 2018 Brown Democracy Medal. You can listen to more Take Note interviews on wpsu.org/take note. I'm Min Shen, WPSU.